The boom in young adult novels. From Harry Potter to The Hunger Games, John Green to Gillian French, young adult or YA literature is an exploding sector of the publishing industry. There are now thousands of YA titles released each year in what has become a growing and profitable market for book publishers. Here's something interesting. Most YA readers are adults. Depending on which study you cite, somewhere between 55 and 70% of YA readers are over 18. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Main Calling, we will learn more about YA literature and why it's so popular. We'll also hear from Maine authors of young adult books about their approach to writing for young adults. And we'll get some good YA book recommendations. Main Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Young adult, or YA, literature surged into the spotlight with books such as Harry Potter and The Hunger Games. Well, today we're going to look at just what constitutes a young adult book, and we'll also learn why this category has become so popular. Joining me in our studio, Kate Egan. She is the editorial director of KCP Loft, the young adult imprint of Kids Can Press. She's also a freelance book editor and an author. Among other projects, she edited the Hunger Games series. Megan Fraser Blakemore is an award-winning author of young adult and middle grade novels and also a librarian. And Melissa Kim is editorial director at Island Port Press and a children's book author. We want to hear from you. Are you one of the many adults who enjoys young adult novels? Do you have a favorite YA book or author? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And thank you all for being here. Megan, I'll start with you. It's interesting to me that you write young adult novels and middle grade novels. What's the difference?
From a purely audience standpoint, middle grade is typically geared towards ages 8 through 12. Young adult is 12 and up. From a technique or content approach, I think of young adult being closer to a typical adult novel, and middle grade, you're thinking a little bit more about the audience as a child.
When you say a typical adult novel, is it because the subject matter may be very sophisticated and there are all sorts of sophisticated literary techniques, yet the protagonist fits within a certain age range?
Exactly. So, you know, in terms of length, the number of characters, the themes that you're tackling in a young adult novel, they would be at home in any sort of fiction that you would be reading, but the main character does tend to be a teenager.
All right. So, Melissa, why do you think young adult novels have this surge in popularity right now?
I have a couple of theories about that, which I hope we'll explore today. One of them is that I think is the pacing of them. So, you know, I know that they go quickly. People think that teens have short attention spans now with all the demands on their time with social media and their phones and Netflix. And so the pace of them is really fast, and I think that's why teens like them, but I also think that's why adults like them. So I think at least 50% of all the readers of YA are adults, and I think probably because of the pacing. They're short, they move quickly. You know, I like to listen to books, to audiobooks, and I listen to YA ones because they move along so quickly, and they're fun to listen to. And I think my other theory is that I think YA books tend to have a more hopeful message at the end. And I think writers of young adult fiction feel an obligation to give teenagers some sense of hope or positivity. And I think people are really looking for that right now. And something that ends with a little optimism or a little bit of empowerment or hope, or you can actually do something, or there may be not necessarily a happy ending, but some kind of hopeful feeling. And I think that's really resonating right now. People like that.
Kate, I want to ask you some broad questions. First, I want to ask you what it was like to edit the Hunger Games series. When you first got a hold of those, did you realize what you had in your hands?
I did not realize. But I knew it was a manuscript I couldn't put down, the very first one. And then each manuscript that came after that was like, it was like Christmas morning when they arrived. I was excited as readers became to find out what would happen next in the story.
And Melissa was talking about hopefulness. Those are pretty dark.
They are pretty dark. Although, you know, you can read the ending of the third book many different ways. I have always found the ending to have a ray of hope. But I also think that what readers find hope in that series is Katniss's characteristics, that she's so strong, that she's so brave, that she can power through the very worst situation that a young person could imagine.
And I was struck by the word you used, Melissa, empowerment, because these are strong characters, whether it's the Hunger mm-hmm. Games or the characters in a John Green book. Or, I mean, Megan, are you thinking about empowering your characters when you're writing these novels?
I think so, in the sense, like, they don't all have to be like Katniss, who is an amazing character, but not every character is going to be strong in the same way that she is. But recognizing the strength that these characters have within them to get over whatever their problems are, and showing the teen readership that, yes, we all have obstacles and we all have things that we're going to face. But again, getting back to that hope that there, in the end, hopefully there is a bit of hope.
Are there genres within young adult fiction that are more popular, more appropriate for young adult novels? I mean, we're talking a little bit about fantasy here. Melissa, what are you seeing?
I'm seeing a couple of things this year, or maybe last year and this year, that I think are becoming more popular. One is definitely a diversity one, and writers of color, and including characters that are more diverse. Obviously, the biggest one, I think, is The Hate U Give, and so, which is about a police shooting, and that's going to be a movie this fall. I think that's one big trend. I think another one is, or maybe a side of that, is immigration and refugee-type stories. And I think, again, because a lot of it's been in the news, I think writers are inspired by current events and what's happening topically and are taking those. I just read a great historical novel, which was an immigration story. I think those are also really big. And then I hear that mystery thriller is really big in YA, too.
And everyone's nodding.
I think that's just an escapism thing, right? I mean, it's sort of like the ongoing vampire trend. Now there's werewolves or mermaids are really big. And I think, again, that's just for fun.
So. Okay, Kate, tell me what you're seeing.
Well, I was hoping to get the same question. I would have answered it exactly the same way. You know, what comes across my desk as an editor, of course, are books that may or may not be published. You know, I'm getting submissions from authors who are hoping to be published, and I'm seeing so many stories along the lines that you just mentioned. And I also would just add, you know, publishers are making an effort to be more inclusive and include diverse voices. But it comes from, publishers are eager to do this because it's the right thing to do. But also, I think there's a hunger on the part of readers for stories like this. I don't think it's only a trend that's driven by the adults in the room, but I think it's also driven by the teen readers who really want stories that they have not seen before.
Mm-hmm. My daughter used to go to the library and say, I want books about real girls. Yeah. She doesn't want mm-hmm. stories about imaginary girls, somebody she can relate to. Megan, I want you to tell me about Good and Gone, your book that was published last year, right?
Yes, exactly. So Good and Gone is a road trip book. It's about a character named Lexi, and she and her brother and their neighbor decide to go looking for a pop star who has gone missing from his tour bus. There's a lot of tension between Lexi and her brother, and as the story goes on, their past comes out, and in particular, her past with an abusive boyfriend is revealed. And it's a novel, I would say it's about family and being there for one another, but the context of the story is one of consent, which again, I think is another topic that has been covered well and widely recently in YA.
Is there in the publishing world some pushback? So many of the young adult books deal with, you know, you were talking about consent, abuse, sexuality. Are there sectors that are pushing back in your librarian, Megan, against some of these books and saying these are not appropriate for 12 to 18 year olds?
Definitely. And I always, that word inappropriate always stops me because these are things that happen to real teens. And when you say that story is inappropriate, you're basically saying that a certain segment of the population is inappropriate for one reason or another. And obviously, not every teen has experienced all of these things, but it's a way, if they haven't, for them to develop some empathy.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about something I learned reading up for this show today, which is kind of the history of YA literature. And then it's sort of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the article from the Smithsonian Magazine that we posted on Facebook kind of puts the beginning of contemporary young adult fiction in 1967 with The Outsiders. Would you all agree?
I would say that's a good place to begin. And certainly when I was growing up, I was familiar with The Outsiders, and there were books like it on the spinner racks at my library, but there was not a huge selection for young adults. I remember clearly the day that I left the children's room in the library and went to the adult room. And now we have an explosion of young adult literature, which I think really came about in the 90s. I mean, I think it's fairly recent. When I started working in publishing in the mid 90s, there was a lot more energy around middle grade and very little around YA, and the pendulum swung all the way over to YA and now is beginning to swing back, I think, a bit.
I would agree with that, yeah. Although I think there probably have been books for teenagers, you know, for longer than that, but I think the popularity certainly grew in the 60s when people were, I mean, like even Judy Blume starting to write, like to write about sexuality in a book for middle graders or for teenagers to say it's okay to think about your bodies. Like, I think that was a really...
You there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of certainly broke a wall and let everybody write that. But, you know, Catcher in the Rye was, I mean, I'd consider that pretty seminal as well. So, yeah, I think probably the 60s started it, but I'm sure it was there before, maybe just not as we weren't aware of it. And certainly the book market just wasn't as big. You know, people weren't buying books. It's kind of like restaurants. There just weren't as many, right?
Oh, interesting. And I ought to mention that the PBS Great American Read does name some of the books we're talking about in its top 100 novels list. Obviously, The Outsiders. And I don't think we can have this conversation without talking about the Harry Potter books. What has Harry Potter done for young adult literature? Megan?
I think it primed a generation of readers. So you had people who were so involved in the books and the movies and the world. And then they needed something else. They became readers because of these books. And now you have this huge audience that's ready to read more fantasy, but also more realistic fiction, more mysteries, everything. It just sort of, I think it's amazing what it did to readership.
And how about John Green? If anybody here doesn't have a teenager or hasn't been to the movies lately, John Green takes very sensitive but realistic situations children go through, from cancer to mental illness, and works it into a novel. And a couple of them have turned into very popular movies. It's not really a question, but I was just wondering how much of an influence has John Green had on this genre?
I think the big thing is that he was already writing during the sort of Twilight years, meaning Twilight, the vampire books.
The books.
That's right.
And at that time, it was really hard to sell realistic YA fiction. I was out on submission a long time, and then all of a sudden John Green came and he was this huge bestseller, and publishers were once again willing to look at realistic fiction. So I think he opened up the market again.
What are you hearing as a librarian from the 12 to 18 year olds who walk in? What are they asking for, and how do they ask for it?
Well, so now I'm at a K-5 school, so I mostly have the younger edge of that. But again, just sort of like your daughter, they want stories about real kids with real problems. And then I do have the kids who they really want series. So they want the Harry Potter, they want the Rick Riordan, they want the Hunger Games, and they want to know what's the next big series going to be.
And what's your prediction?
I don't know.
What about you guys? Kate?
I can't think offhand of a series that is brewing the way some of those series. I mean, I think sometimes these series just come up out of nowhere, but there's certainly amazing books that are out there right now. There's a book called The Hazelwood, which is...
I'm reading that right now.
I'm leaving for vacation on Monday, and it's on the top of my list. But the main character's grandmother was an author, and the characters from her novel spring to life and cause trouble for her family in the book. So it's sort of a meta treatment of writing and characters.
Okay, Melissa, do you have any predictions?
I think maybe The Children of Blood and Bone. So that's the big bestseller right now by Tomi, I don't want to mispronounce her name, Adeyemi. And I think that's saying that it's going to be a series, right? So that's the bestseller, I think, of the spring. It's written by she's very young, and it's set in Africa. It's got a lot of Nigerian, I believe, lore, and she pulls on a lot of mythology and folklore. And the main character is there's two sets. There's two women and two boys, two men, I guess, two young men and two young women who are the main characters. They're both siblings. It's very, it's really fast-paced. It's very powerful. And I think if that becomes a series, that'll probably be the big one.
Okay. And before we go to a break, I want to ask about the relationship between authors and their readers. For YA authors, it's different, isn't it? I mean, I'm guessing, and tell me if I'm wrong, Megan, you're expected to have a social media presence. It's a very personal relationship.
It is. So like on the way in here, I took a picture of myself to put on Instagram. So you're sort of documenting what you're doing, your writing, your life. And it is, it's interesting. I find it sort of fun and exciting, but also so different than the way I grew up when everything was so much more private and the writer was like, you had no idea. Like Judy Blume could live on the moon as far as I was concerned. So that access is, it really changes things.
So in a way you kind of have to turn yourself into a teenager in some ways.
I actually get a little frustrated when people are like, I'm still a teenager at heart. And I'm like, no, you're a grown up. You need to still be,
posted a picture on Instagram on your way into the studio.
That is true.
I think that's one of John Green's big differences in John Green, too, because he was a big YouTube star, right? He was posting a lot of videos on YouTube. So his readers knew him really well, even before his books were popular. I think he was known. He was a known quantity and people knew him and liked him and were waiting for his books, even before his books had come out. And that's a whole new arena for a lot of authors.
And Kate, the authors you work with, same thing?
Oh, absolutely. And when we're signing up new projects, we want to know that the author is willing to engage with readers like that. You know, if an author prefers not to engage like that, they might be better writing for a different audience.
A book tour is not enough for a YA author.
No. And a middle grade author, you know, a lot of the outreach they do is with teachers and librarians, but with YA authors, they are expected to interact with the readers.
Oh, so interesting. Well, we do have to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Float Harder Relaxation Center. Flotation therapy, because self-care isn't selfish, it's essential. More at floatharder.com. And Two Fat Cats, scratch baking with an emphasis on Maine desserts and pies, in Portland and South Portland, and at twofatcatsbakery.com.
Hey, got a minute? It's really true, really. Your support, your financial support, is what makes this service possible and keeps it going. If you rely on it, hopefully you not only know that already, but do your part financially to ensure that we keep public radio strong here in Maine. Now, if you aren't a supporter, please think a bit more about the value of this service, how essential it is in your life, the fact that you can trust what you hear, and how you count on this service to better understand the important stories and issues of the day, and where you would be if public radio weren't public radio. Please do your part. Let's grow together. Online right now at mainepublic.org or on Super Thursday, August 2nd, our upcoming one-day on-air campaign. And thanks so much.
Super Thursday coming up on August 2nd, but you can contribute right now at mainepublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475.
A Tea Party role was something you worked your way up to. A first step that would lead to more ambitious steps, clown gigs, dinner theater, and eventually, commercial work.
The Land of Opportunity. This week on Selected Shorts from PRI, Public Radio International.
Join us this Sunday night at 8 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the surging interest in young adult literature. Joining me in the studio, Megan Fraser Blakemore, who is a librarian and author of young adult novels. Melissa Kim is a children's book author and editorial director at Island Port Press. And Kate Egan is editorial director of KCP Loft and a book editor and author. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining me now on the line is critically acclaimed author Jillian French. She's the author of the award-winning young adult novel Grit and other novels. Jillian, thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us what you try to achieve in your novels. What makes them work as young adult novels?
I think that the coming of age experience is really what defines a young adult novel for me. At some point, this protagonist needs to cross the bridge from childhood to adulthood, often painfully. And that's really the type of story that I try to tell.
Describe to people who haven't heard about it your novel Grit, and then what you've heard from fans of the book in terms of what they've responded to.
Grit is a realistic contemporary novel. It follows a main girl growing up on the Penobscot River who is raking blueberries for her summer job with her sister and cousin. And she has a bad reputation in her small community, and we come to uncover a lot of mysteries and secrets, and we sort of learn more about this protagonist and why it's, this bad reputation is really undeserving, but she's sort of taken it on herself to protect somebody else. I've got a lot of really wonderful response in this book. The critics have been so kind, and I've had a lot of mostly women in their 20s, interestingly, have reached out to me about that one to say that they just really connected with the characters. They felt so real to them and very much of the age group that I was writing about.
Well, Jillian, as I'm sure you heard, one of the people in the Studio 3 here today is Melissa Kim. And Melissa, I'm going to put you on the spot. What makes... Melissa edited one of your books, I understand, and I want to ask you, what makes Jillian's books special?
I think one of the things that I think is really impressive about her books is that even though she's really firmly set them in a Maine landscape, they appeal to everyone across the nation or anywhere because they really are about the experiences that everyone has as a teenager. And I think also the thing I think is really great is that they appeal both, can certainly appeal to both women and men. They're not just for girls. And I think that's a really tough thing to do. And the third thing that I really love about Jillian's writing is I think she's great with dialogue. And I've asked her, you know, what do you eavesdrop on teenagers? How do you do this? Are you stalking or lurking? Because your dialogue is so perfect. It's really good. So I think those are some real strengths of her writing.
So what's the answer, Jillian? Do you eavesdrop on teenagers?
I don't. But I think that time was just, it was very significant in my life, that sort of separating from family and finding out who I was. And I just remember the conversations had with friends and how impactful those years were. And I guess it stayed with me.
Well, what are you working on next?
Right now, I am working on two books. I've never done it before, so we'll see how it goes. But I'm working on two YA books. One's suspense and one is more psychological. And I'm just plugging away every day, and I hope that I can finish them.
Well, we hope you can finish them, too. Thank you for joining us. That was Jillian French. She's the author of several young adult books, including her popular debut novel, Grit. Thanks, Jillian, for joining us. And we'll move on to the other calls. We're going to go to Emily, who's calling from Alfred. Hi, Emily. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
I'm calling because my sister-in-law recommended this book. And it looks kind of childish on the series. It's by Brandon Mull. He does a few different series, and I was entranced the whole book. I read the whole series in like a week. I read it to my children at bedtime. My sister who hated reading, my daughter who hated reading, she's read the series about 6 times. She loves to read. She loves everything about reading out because of these books.
Ooh, Emily, we're starting to lose you, but are you all familiar with Brandon Mull's work? Yeah, everybody's nodding in the studio.
He's written a couple of different series, so I'm not sure which ones. Fable Haven is one, right. And that's the one I can remember.
I can picture the other cover, but I can't remember.
Yeah, he's great. He writes a lot. He has at least 3 series, I think, going. And yeah, really popular. I know my son loved them.
Thank you, Emily, for calling in. I'm going to go to Ada in Falmouth. Hi, Ada. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm interested in becoming an author myself, and I was wondering if you guys talked earlier about connecting with your readers through like social media. Do you ever find that like difficult? Is that something that you feel is like a really important thing, or is it possible to be a YA author without all the social media stuff?
I think before you have a published book, the main thing that you do is perfect your writing. And the good news for anybody who's not ready to jump in on social media, the good news is that a lot of the hard work of writing is done alone, and it's done, you know, at your house. You don't need to connect with people on social media when you're working on your book. And in fact, from any writing I've done, I feel like the less input I have from the outside world, the better. So if you're just writing your first book now, you know, pour all your energy into that. Make that book the best that it can be. And you don't need to worry about the social media part until you have a plan to bring it out into the world with a publisher or otherwise.
And I'm guessing publishers work with their authors.
Yes.
And help them.
Yes. A lot of authors are solitary creatures, and a lot of authors are nervous about the social media piece of it. And so the publisher is there to help the writer and to really coach them and launch them as a team. So no writer is expected to figure it all out on her own.
Ada, did you say that you're 18 years old?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful that you're thinking of writing a novel. That's fantastic. Since I have two other authors in the studio with me as well, I'm going to ask them both if they have any advice for you. Melissa?
Well, I think I would definitely echo Kate's. I mean, the writing is the most important part. And I think you can certainly get published if you have no social media presence, but you're a great writer. But the converse isn't true. You could have a great social media presence, but your writing's lousy. That won't get you published. So definitely focus on the writing. And I would say share your writing with other people. If you have a trusted circle of friends or a small writing group, once you've written it, share it with some trusted readers and get their feedback. I think that's a really great step.
And I would agree, just to add to that, to read and read widely. Definitely read, like if you're writing fantasy, read fantasy, but also read other genres, read poetry, read nonfiction, because you can learn a lot from reading other people.
Ada, good luck to you, and thanks for calling in. We're going to go to Susan in North Berwick. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on the Harry Potter series. I'm a former manager for Barnes & Noble, and you really can't overstate the impact that series had on young readers as from the publishing standpoint of just letting people know that there was a real market there and that there was real money to be made there. I haven't seen ever since the last one was published, I've never seen another series draw 2,000 people at midnight to buy their book and their Harry, the next Harry Potter book. So it was really quite wonderful.
Thanks. I would also add to that, too. I think Harry Potter, when you were asking what was the difference, I think that also was a series that made it okay for adults to read young adult or middle grade, because so many adults are reading Harry Potter and adults are seeing the movies, too. So it's sort of like thinking it's okay for me to like Harry Potter, even if I'm an adult.
I read that in England, it's published with two different covers.
Right.
One targeted toward adults and one targeted to teenagers. Yeah. So that's terrific. Susan, thanks for calling in. I'm going to quickly go through some Facebook posts and emails with people giving recommendations. And you all jump in if you want to, or I'll just go through. This is somebody who said she's looking forward to Rachel Lucas's The State of Grace coming out in the U.S., she says no books like it really, as females on the spectrum, forget teen ones, are woefully underrepresented. So that was Elena on Facebook. Sarah says Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas. You all are all nodding. Dragon Rider series by Anne McCaffrey. The Shadow Hunters books.
I just remember loving Anne McCaffrey when I was in seventh grade and, you know, running off to the library to get the next one in the series. So I haven't read the Sarah J. Maas books, but I know they have a huge following and I need to add them to my list.
Lori on Facebook says The Girl Who Drank the Moon by Kelly Barnhill.
I love that book, although I would consider that more middle grade. You know, going back to that distinction, I think of it more as a book for kids in upper elementary school.
Okay. Sarah on Facebook says, yes, I love YA as an adult reader. If anyone's looking for a new series, I highly recommend the Ranger's Apprentice series, 13 books and a great story.
Mm-hmm. That's really popular with boys.
Okay,
say.
Ranger's yep. Apprentice. This is the same book that you were recommending before. This is a school librarian named Deanna recommending Children of Blood and Bone by Tomi Adeyemi, if that's how I pronounced it. And she also says she recommends it highly for young adult readers who love the Black Panther. Mm-hmm. So Saving Sammy, a true medical mystery about a 12-year-old boy on the coast of Maine. That's an email from Beth. And Heather says, in the early 90s, Mercedes Lackey wrote a series about the Heralds of Valdemar, and the hero is in a same-sex relationship. What was so revolutionary for me was that this was a small part, not a focus of the characters. As a hetero teen, it was refreshing to read about diversity within a genre I loved and something to which I did not have a lot of exposure in my small town. And then a tweet. What are your opinions of the lack of teen interest towards history books? As a 17-year-old myself, as well as a published historian, I'm somewhat saddened when I see apathy shown towards this ever-growing field.
I mean, I think there is renewed interest among teen readers for books about current affairs. I think that the moment that we're living through right now, teens are more active in various resistance movements, and I think that that's translating into an interest in current events. And I would love to think that that might develop into an interest in history among teens, but I think the jury may still be out on that.
Okay. We're going to go now to Kenny Breckner, who's the owner of Duvaney, Doak, and Garrett Booksellers in Farmington. Thanks for joining us, Kenny.
Thank you for having me.
Did I pronounce your right last name correctly?
On spot.
Oh, good. So what are you seeing at your store in terms of interest in young adult literature? Is it growing, and who's buying the books?
Well, it certainly is. It has been a growing market on a few different fronts. I mean, as your esteemed panelists have been mentioning, there's a growing market to adults who are learning, who are beginning to appreciate it as a very distinct genre with its own pleasures and its own constructions and a lot of depth and literary quality. So we have see a lot of devoted YA readers among adults. The second thing I think that's really impacted things is that the publishers have been acquiring a real influx of talented younger authors who are very relatable to their readers, like Stephen Bachman, Sabaté here, or just Melissa Albert, and a whole raft of other really talented young authors who are adept at social media, as you've been talking about. And that has really been building followings and growing the market, and I see people coming in for that or wanting to talk to us about that. As well as real responsiveness to all things that are out in their environment. As was just being mentioned, it's a very critical time, and YA has been very responsive to that. In fact, when I think about a lot of the most popular new genres or new themes in the books at the store, they're reflective along those lines, which I can enumerate for you if you'd like.
But. Yeah, what are the genres that you're seeing interest in right now?
Well, I mean, certainly some like hot button, rip from the headlines kind of things, race issues. There were three books on police shootings that were published within 5 months of each other without any internal correlation. Dear Martin by Nick Stone, Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, American Boys by Jason Reynolds, all terrific, all did really well, all looked at the similar themes but did so in with a lot of gray and a lot of nuance and were widely used in both schools and were extremely popular. Another thing that's really hot right now is gender fluidity. As I'm looking at books coming out, there's a raft of really good ones. One that's out already is the 57 Bus, which is actually a nonfiction account of an event that transpired in Oakland, in which Sasha, who identified as a girl wearing a skirt, born as a boy, was lit on fire by another bus rider, a young African-American boy. And it looks at it showing the failures of binary thinking on all accounts, both in the juvenile justice system as well as in the gender lines. It's absolutely powerful, and that's been doing really well for us. But Amy Rose Capetta has a book called The Brilliant Death coming out, which is uses magic in the sense of being able to transform your body to either gender and it's just terrific. I think that's going to do really well. And Sarah Porter's Never Contented Things, which goes back to another popular theme of fairy or the bread and lays, but again, in a gender-twisting way that I think is going to do extremely well. Another thing that we're seeing a lot of that's doing extremely well is meta books that take world-building like literally and figuratively and weave them into the narrative. Hazelwood is kind of the groundbreaker there, a la The Magicians by Lev Grossman. That's just a terrific book, and Laura Weymouth's Light Between Worlds is going to be dynamite in that line. It's a reimagining of Narnia with the ending that a lot of us wanted to see for Susan the first time around.
Kenny, it sounds like a YA fan who walks into your bookstore is in luck. They're going to get some good recommendations.
I do love YA.
Well, I thank you so much for calling in. That's Kenny Breckner. He's the owner of DDG booksellers in Farmington. On that note, we're going to take another break. When we come back, more of your calls and questions. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com.
Provincetown, Massachusetts lost many people to the AIDS crisis of the 1980s.
And that's what Provincetown has sincerely afforded, is that sense of you're more than the disease, you're still a human being.
Now a new memorial helps remember the lives lost to the disease and those who helped to care for them. On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll also dig into the numbers behind HIV diagnoses today, and we'll hear about which communities are disproportionately affected. Please join us.
Coming up shortly, after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
When you wake up each morning, chances are good your eyes are opened in another way, too, by listening to Morning Edition. Hi, this is Erwin Gratz. This public radio service helps you become aware, to understand, to learn, basically to grow as you go about your morning. Morning Edition feeds your curiosity and need to know and understand what's going on. And public radio depends on you to stay strong and grow as well. It's an essential service, seemingly becoming more important each and every day, that runs on listeners' support. So let's grow together. If you haven't already, please support this station financially right now at mainpublic.org or on Super Thursday, our upcoming one-day campaign on August 2nd. And thanks.
Super Thursday coming up August 2nd, but you can contribute right now at mainpublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, interest in young adult books. Joining us today, Melissa Kim, who is editorial director at Island Port Press, Kate Eek, and a freelance book editor and author, and Megan Fraser Blakemore, who is an author and librarian. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Jean, who's calling from Reedfield. Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
Hi. I have some tips that you all might know about. Okay?
Go ahead.
And the first tip is Iguana Tree, which is probably the best of the immigration novels. Iguana Tree.
Okay. And go on.
And another, which I heard interviewed or review on public radio last year, and we read it, was Midnight Without a Moon. And that is set in Mississippi at the end till murder time. However, it's a grandmother who doesn't want to rock the boat and a granddaughter who does, Afro-American both, and a remarkable story of that weekend in American history. And those are two tips. Now, there's a writer up in the Pacific Northwest. Maybe one of your editors will know about him. He wrote a lot about high school and junior high school wrestling, using wrestling as a metaphor for kids growing up. And I don't know his name.
I think you've stumped us. But right. Thank you, Jean. If you think of it, go on our Facebook page and put a comment on. But thank you so much for your call and for your recommendations. We'll move on to Mike, who's calling from Massachusetts. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi. Great conversation. Former English teacher, taught a little college, and young adult literature has been around for millennia. Two brothers who couldn't get along, Cain and Abel, Romeo and Juliet, Huckleberry Finn, the list is endless, endless. I love young adult literature. I've been reading it all my life. The themes are universal. They apply to everybody. Love, loss, anger, humiliation, they're all there, discrimination. I think as we become adults, we put more of a sophisticated spin on it, and we're less likely to really look at those problems the way we can look at them a little more honestly when we're teenagers. And I'd like to know what the guests think about why the evangelical Christians clustered in the Midwest caused so many problems with book bannings of young adult literature. I find those people just fascinating, even though I think they're nitwits. I find them fascinating, and why they want to turn the clock back. It's almost like they're afraid to talk about the real problems that are affecting their children and just tell us, go talk to Jesus, everything will disappear. So if you could comment a little on that and some of the other things I said, I'd like that. Thanks.
Mike, thanks for your call.
I think, sir, I love his comment about how young adult literature has been around for millennia. And of course, I can't believe we all missed the Romeo and Juliet, which is like the great teen love, you know, star-crossed lovers. And I think probably hundreds of books have been written in that vein. And this is a little bit of a tangent, but another theme that I see a lot in YA is retellings. So like Pride and Prejudice retold, or a lot of Shakespeare retold, a lot of the classic things retold, because like he was saying, you know, the themes are timeless.
I will just add one thing that speaks to me about YA is that there's always a forward-looking perspective in a YA book, even if the character has experienced some terrible setback or challenge, because the character is sort of at the beginning of life. There's a looking ahead. There's always a note of optimism in a YA novel, and I think that appeals to teenagers and also adults. I'm not sure I can really speak to the question about the evangelicals, except to say that I think some people are very eager to define in a narrow way what it means to be a child or an adult, and I feel that young adult literature now is really eager to explore the young adult experience in its many shapes and forms. And that scares some people.
Mike, thanks so much for your call. Emma on Facebook writes, check out the work of Maine young adult author Sis Deans. She has written several coming of age stories based in Maine. Kirkus Review had this to say about Deans' novel Racing the Past. Many readers want to give 11-year-old Ricky Gordon, the protagonist, a reassuring hug. Life hasn't been kind to him and his family. A year before the story opens, his alcoholic, violent father is killed in an accident, leaving his wife and three children with a terrible legacy of debt, nightmares, fear, and bruises, both physical and emotional. So that recommendation from Emma is Sis Deans' coming-of-age stories based in Maine. And so this gives me the perfect opportunity to ask you all about other Maine YA authors. Megan's here in the room with us. Jillian French called in. Just like with adult authors, we have an embarrassment of riches here in Maine, don't we? We have national, internationally caliber writers in our midst.
I would agree. I can start with that. One of my favorite YA authors in Maine is Maria Padian, and her latest book, Wrecked, is just it's such a well-told story. It's about consent on a college campus. It's so thoughtfully done. It's two different perspectives, not the one who has the issue. So it's just really skillfully done. I would recommend that to any teenager going to college or anyone sending their teenager to college. I think it's a great book. So I hope Marie is out there listening. She's also written a book called Out of Nowhere, which is set in Maine. And so she's one of my favorites.
Kate?
I just wanted to mention a book by an old friend who may or may not be listening to this show, but I happen to know that Anika Risi has a new young adult novel out called Always, Forever, Maybe. She's a Deer Isle native. She lives in my native state of New Jersey now. But I know that it's a story about a girl whose first love transforms into a toxic relationship and cuts her off slowly from the people she cares about the most. It's topical, it's current, and I'm dying to read this book.
And how do you spell Reese?
Risi. R-I-S-S-I.
Okay. Your turn, Megan.
Well, so I wanted to talk about two people. First of all, the person who I will drop everything and read her books whenever they come out is Terry Farish, who is a poet. And so her first book, The Good Breeder, was in verse. Her next book was in prose, but it's beautiful, poetic prose. I think she is amazing. She lives down in Kittery. And then I think that you can't really talk about young adult literature in Maine without thinking about Stephen King. I really believe that if he showed up at a publisher today with Carrie, they would publish it as YA. Mm-hmm. Personally, when I was a teenager, I read a lot of his books because it was one of the places where I could find what I felt was an authentic representation of what it was like to be a teenager. And he took teens seriously, which I think is another thing that's at the heart of YA writing.
Kate on Facebook says, the main, and she is an English and language arts teacher at Skowhegan Area Middle School. She says, the main student book award list is a great place to find terrific YA choices. This year, there are several choices on the list that tackle the refugee crisis. We will be reading, posted by John David Anderson, by the way, which happens when a school says no more phones and kids switch to post-it notes. And The Notorious Benedict Arnold by Steve Schenken is an unbelievable account of Benedict Arnold's ill-fated march up the Kennebec. Unbelievably grisly mission. So there's another history book for our young person who tweeted earlier. We're going to go to Doris in York. Hi, Doris. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I love your show.
Thank you.
A few winters ago, I decided to reread all of the Laura Ingalls Wilder books, the Little House on the Prairie books, which are actually nothing like the show. And it was a very interesting experience because I saw the books through the adults' point of view, really, and the hardships that they went through. And it was especially noted in the long, long winter of what they had to do to survive. And I just wondered if anybody had, you know, done that, read books as a child and then reread them as adults and got a different perspective.
Sounds like a great idea. I think we do sometimes when we are parents and we read to our children some of our favorite books and realize they aren't exactly how we remembered them.
I would agree with that. You know, right now I have a 13-year-old and he's reading things that I hadn't read in a long time. So I recently reread To Kill a Mockingbird and I wept at the end. And I'm sure when I was 15, I didn't weep at the end. I did now. And then we read the whole Giver series as well. And I had a really different feeling about it now than I did when I had first read it. So, yeah, I think that's true as a parent. When you reread them, especially with your teenager who's reading them, it's a very different. You look at it very differently.
Doris, thanks so much for your call. A tweet from Tim. Has there been a reboot of the Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew series? I read all of them as a young adult and preteen.
There is a graphic novel reboot of Nancy Drew that it's aimed a little younger. Nancy in that series is probably like 11 or 12. And, you know, over the years, there's been several, like the Nancy Drew Files, but I'm not sure that there is a recent one. There was talk of making a TV show, but some of the powers that be didn't think that she was a strong enough lead character, which I'm still a little angry about.
Well, now you get to vent,
Megan.
We have an email from John. I graduated college a few years ago and loved creative writing workshops. The feedback was great. I have a few ideas and a bit of work I'd love to have workshopped, but I've had trouble finding connections or people willing to read. Does the panel have any recommendations for workshopping?
Well, Melissa and I are both on the board of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, so I'd like to promote that. And in fact, tomorrow at the Graves Memorial Library at 10 a.m., I'm doing a Children's Lit 101, like introduction to publishing workshop. So people are welcome to come to that. But the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance offers a number of workshops, as does the Telling Room for adults who want to write as well.
And I would put in a plug for the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. It's a mouthful. It goes by the not so handy acronym SCBWI. And if you look them up online, they have a wealth of resources, but they can help you find a critique group to work with in your community. And they're especially active here in New England, so they would be a great resource for you.
Okay, well, and that's our last question of the hour. I really appreciate you all being here. I can tell that there's a great conversation going on our Facebook page, people recommending books. I hope that that continues past this hour. And again, thank you to our guest, the voice you just heard, Kate Egan, editorial director of KCP Loft, the young adult imprint of Kids Can Press. She's a freelance book editor and author of 5 books. Megan Fraser Blakemore is an author of young adult and middle grade novels and also a librarian. And Melissa Kim, the editorial director of Islandport Press, as well as a children's book author. Sandra Harris ran the book today. If you ever want to listen to past editions of Maine Calling or look up resources we posted, you can go to mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 7. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandreau. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.